Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Precision Unloaded podcast. You're once again joined by Mark and Graham. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Graham.
We're doing this. We're trying to crank a few out. So this is our second one in the last couple of days. So tonight we're going to be talking about a recent trip a couple of weeks ago down to the Carlos Southern Precision Challenge in Gore. So this was round one of the New Zealand PRS, the reinvigorated PRS series in 2024.
Rebooted.
Yep.
Reimagined.
Yep. So, yeah, we'll be getting into it. So we're not just talking about the match. It's sort of the whole adventure. Normally when we go away, there's a few dramas. And this one had more than all the other trips combined when it comes to dramas. So there's a few funny things to talk about. And then the match itself, two-day match, shooting that, mistakes, good things, etc. Yeah. And then obviously coming home. And we might as well kick straight into it, Mark. So we... The weekend before this, we had the long range challenge, so we weren't exactly we didn't have a lot of spare time leading up to this event, to the point I only put the rifle together, a couple of days before the match. But we decided to head down. So you, I assume, well, I know, but you were using the same setup as you used to win at Ahatiti.
Yeah.
Yep.
The Desert Tech SRS Creedmoor with the TMB still on it. And the Veldada Recon GTM Mini. So, yep, no change. Unfortunately, I should have changed something, like the Zero. But anyway, we'll get to that. What about yourself, Graham? You obviously got yours all running that week, basically. I think you turned up at home a couple of times.
I even turned up when you weren't there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I wasn't there at all. Yeah.
No, you were once, and we had to rescue some sheep.
So what were you running this time? Was it the 6 or the 6.5 or the...
So the 6 is dead. That's waiting on a new 25 barrel. So 6.5 Creed is the only current sort of good-to-go setup I've got in the comp sort of race gun stuff. So I put the Masterpiece Arms setup into, funnily enough, Masterpiece Arms Matrix Pro chassis. So the heavier chassis, wider forend.
Yeah.
Up until like a month ago was the coolest chassis you could get from their range. I've got a slightly revised version now. But it's a pretty...
What?
I don't actually know what the differences are, but I think they made the buttstock lighter just for balance. But it's
significant.
Yeah. But it's a pretty high-end chassis, not just cost-wise, but feature-wise, it's pretty cool. And yeah, so I put that in there.
Winningest.
Winning it, maybe. I put that in there and a little bit of weight in the fore end just to balance it out because I haven't got a particularly heavy profile barrel in my 6.5. So now number 7 profile, so a little bit of weight in the chassis just to balance the gun a bit. Probably not balanced perfectly, to be fair. Probably needs a wee bit more. And yeah, just
forward or back?
No, in the front, just a little bit. But the new barrel's to be honest,
sort that out.
The new barrel's the new MPA contour, which is quite large, so it'll probably have to take some weight out of the forend. But anyway, what we used, and then the Loophole Mark V, yeah, pretty straightforward. And then due to the fact that a week or 2 weeks after this event, we had the Punisher Teams match. So I'd actually made up a load with the 147 ELDM. So sort of heavier than I'd normally run for a medium range sort of event. But due to the time between events, we went with 147s. Yeah, so that was a setup, MPA setup. Yeah.
Seemed like the way to go.
It worked well. Like I said, there's still a podcast to come out of Super Steel, but we had Super Steel in January and then setting up and running Long Range Challenge. I didn't really have any time to do much in the way of shooting myself, so the getting the gun set up was definitely a last-minute thing. It was very last-minute, so I was pretty happy with how I went considering my, 40 rounds of practice I put in. But anyway, we'll get to that when we get to the match itself. So,
and I think you had, unlike my throw all technology at it, binoculars looking to the Kestrel, looking to the HUD, you just had paper data, didn't you? Hard data, as they say.
Yeah, well, the event's only, it was a lot more short range than I expected.
I suppose it was only really 800.
Yeah, and then that was only one or two stages that went that far. Most stuff was, three to five.
Yeah.
So I run charts. I run Stralock Pro forever, like nearly all of us when we first got into the game, because it was a cool app to get. This is back when we had somewhat normal relations with Russia, being it's a Russian app. It's been caught up in sanctions due to the fact it's used by, funnily enough, Russian marksmen for military use. And so when I shot Barren Earth, I killed my iPhone and had to get a new one. And so, yeah, no Stralock on my new phone when it tried to download. So I had to quickly got the Element Optics app, which works surprisingly well. The interface is a bit clunky, in my opinion, but it's not too bad, and it lined everything up pretty well. Obviously, being able to go to your place and check data at essentially 100-meter intervals and right out to 1,400 meters, check it over, and then I just printed out data cards here with 20-meter increments, so 300 out to 1,000, I think I did, or something along those lines, and I just got your stage info. I just take the information off there and make a chart off my or a dope chart off my hard data. That's how I ran the whole weekend. Yeah, I didn't, and then I just used like gun number for the wind and paid lots of attention to the environmentals, i.e. the rain and stuff, to see where it was going. And yeah, we went pretty old school data wise, and you did the opposite.
What's gun number?
Well, like how do I explain this without mincing it? So like a slower five with a low obesity bullet would be like a 5-mile-an-hour gun. Like mine's probably like a 6-mile-an-hour gun. And so you can sort of just like extrapolate the wind speed. If you know the wind speed, you know at each 100-meter increment how much to increase your hold by.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It's simple. I might be saying it wrong.
No, it's good.
But yep. Anyway, getting from Taranaki to Gore, we're going to name this segment Simple Made Hard.
Yeah. So I booked a while ago, and I thought I'll take the cheapest flight, which is on a Wednesday, to go to Christchurch, because I thought I'll fly to Christchurch and drive down from there for some ungodly reason.
Turns out Christchurch to Gore is far further than we thought, isn't it, Mark?
Oh, yeah, you look at a map and think, oh, it's just down there. I've driven down there before, but not for a while. And you always just think, we'll smash it out in 5 hours or something. I don't know. Anyway, so I stayed down there, caught up with family, stayed with them, and then met up with Dave from Carlos, who was heading down there as well at the same time. So he stayed with me. But then I'd sort of lost track of the days, which is mistake one. And I thought you were turning up the next day, which I thought was Friday, but it was actually still Thursday. This is because I don't really have a week anymore. I just, every day is the same. So I just lose track of where I'm at. Anyway, so I was going to go, so anyway, I said, well, I stay back, so Dave, you carry on, and we'll catch up, and I'll stay here another night and pick up Graham tomorrow, and then, so this is Thursday, so I'll hand over to you, Graham, to explain what happened next, in terms of turning up on Friday morning.
So my original plan was, yes, to fly down first thing Friday morning. All booked in, all good. Me and Mark sort of sorted all our tickets at the same time. So I would have left Taranaki at 6, got to Christchurch at like 8 or something. Not whatever, 7:38, didn't matter. Direct flight, cool. Simple as, I was, I had all my stuff, essentially. I was just packing my stuff, the last of my gear, had all my rifles and everything ready, shooting gear. Just get my weights done, and it was about 9:15 on Thursday night. Thinking, oh yeah, if I get this finished, get it weighed, go to bed and like, 15 minutes and I'll get up at 4 or something. And then I get an email at 9:15 from Air New Zealand. So I check it and it said, oh, your flight has been cancelled for mechanical reasons. I thought, oh, that's not good. I better quickly book another flight because I've seen this email straight away, right? So I jump on the app. Cool, there's a flight from at like 8:30 a.m. to Christchurch. Sweet. Yep, do you want to transfer? Yes. And then for some reason the app tells me you won't be able to bring your extra bag because my ticket is, a seat plus bag. So I get an extra bag for the rifle. And it says either accept this or ring this number if it's an issue. So I thought, okay, well, I need my rifle. So I ring the number. It takes about 20 minutes to get through. Get a lovely young man, gives me a hand, and he said, oh, no, it should be fine to take your extra bag. Like, that's no issue. And he goes, oh, yeah, okay, I'll just sort that out. Oh, that flight is now fully booked. And then so we start the drama of, like, for some reason that weekend was just...
Yeah, you knew it. Graham, you should have just booked it and turned up.
I know that now, don't I? But it wasn't going to let me take my gun. Anyway, it was saying you cannot take your extra whatever. I don't know. Must have had full cargo hold or something. Anyway, that aside, we start looking for options to get to Christchurch. And really the only things that are working are flying into Christchurch at like 6 that night. And that wouldn't have worked because we needed to be in Gore at that time. So eventually, if we go through every option of flying to different places, Invercargill, this and that, the only option we can settle on is it's like 7:30 or something, 8 a.m. flight from Wellington to Dunedin. So not my final destination, but that's the only way I could get down there. And we'd already put quite a bit of money into this trip. And post-COVID, Air New Zealand does not really give refunds anymore because they just stopped doing it. So anyway, and so that meant I had to pack the car and essentially drive straight to Wellington from my place, so about 5 hours. So I left at probably 10:30. So I drove all the way to Wellington through the night, which was ideal. I had to have a sleep on the side of the highway. And yeah, pulled into Wellington at about, oh, it must have been 5:30 in the morning or something. And had a wait around there. Then so on the Thursday night, I messaged Mark and I tried to ring him, but he's obviously asleep or something. And so I texted him, said, flights are changed. I'm flying into Dunedin. I'll be there at 10:30 a.m. And you woke up at some point while I was driving and messaged me. Yep, sweet. I'll leave early to meet you down there. Sweet as, cool. All right. Not too big a deal. Like, I'm going to have a big night, but whatever. So eventually, when I get to Wellington, go check my stuff in. When they'd set up my new tickets, they hadn't added the extra bag, so I had to plead my case, so to speak, to get my extra bag on without having to pay an extra fee. And then, sweet, fly to Dunedin. That was okay, about an hour flight, nothing crazy. And then I get there, and I'm somewhat expecting Mark to be waiting for me when I arrive. But, you know, thinking, oh, maybe he left at 5 a.m. or something. You were not there, were you, Mark?
And hands back to me. Yeah, no, because I remember when I booked a rental car, quite last minute, there was like only two vehicles available. One was like a big loser cruiser. The other one was a ute. So anyway, and I said, oh, no problem. I'll just turn up early and pick it up. And I was booked in to pick it up at 8:30. I thought I'll just get there early. So I got there early. Nah, can't have it. Nope, nothing. Nah, something not available. Still not back yet. Whatever. Can't pick it up to 8:30. So I'm screwed. So anyway, so I just had to wait till then and pick it up and go. So, which meant you basically were landing shortly after that. And for some reason, it took me an eternity to get even close to Dunedin. So,
but when I got there, I sat in sort of at the front inside the building, still had my rifle in a case. The airport staff knew what it was because I had to get it off them. And by this point, the airport's empty. It's like there's no one in there apart from me and the staff. It's not a big airport, bigger than New Plymouth, but not massive. And I sit there for about an hour waiting for Mark to turn up before I bother messaging him. And by this point, they've got a security guard to sort of stand within like maybe 6-10 meters of me, just try act like he wasn't looking at me the whole time. I was like, oh, okay, it's because I've got the rifle, you know, I've been here for ages. And so I text Mark, and Mark rings me and he goes, oh, I'm in Oamaru or something. And I was like, okay, it's still like 3 hours away. I was like, all right, okay. So I hang up. I thought, fuck, I'm going to be here for a long time. So I go and see the guy. I was like, hey, is there a problem? And he goes, oh, we're just a bit worried because you got your rifle here. And I said, well, it's in a locked case. But and I said, they're like, are you leaving soon? I said, no, my ride's not going to be here for several hours. So they got me to store it. They took it off me. They billed me $10 to store it, I might add. And then so I went and I found like a kid's area and tried to sleep in that, which didn't really work. Got some beanbags. And then the time comes when Mark should have been there. So I go and get my rifle out of their storage thing that they sorted. And they sort of politely asked me to leave now with it, not hang around. So I go sit out front and then Mark rings me. I'm out front for about half an hour and Mark rings. And he says, oh, I'm still like 100 miles away. And I was like, oh, God. So I'm like I'm sitting out front of the airport in like 30 degree sun. And then Mark goes, hey, wait a minute. Dave from Carlos, I'm pretty sure he's in Dunedin at some shop. And so he goes, I'll get back to you. And he rings me back 5 minutes later. He goes, oh, yeah, Dave's coming to rescue you. So it worked out, well, kind of well, but yeah, Dave from Carlos is the major sponsor for this event, and they just sponsored our event the weekend before. And he came and picked me up in his rental car. So by this point, it's like, shit, what time is it? I don't know, 3 o'clock or something. I'd been there since about 10 a.m. So I've seen more than enough of the Dunedin airport for a lifetime.
Fabulous airport too.
It's nicer than our one. But yeah, and then so me and Dave drove down to Gore. Shed. And then weirdly, we go to the hotel, which was nice. And then Mark still didn't turn up for several hours. So I don't know where the hell you ended up or went. But it definitely wasn't a speedy route, that's for sure.
No.
Yeah. It was
8 plus 8. Yeah, so still 4 or 5. Yeah, stopped here. Yeah. It's a long trip.
But anyway, we're in Gore, which is good. So Dave gives us the full tour of Gore, I should say, which is a thrilling, lovely place if you're in the deep south. There's all sorts of attractions. And yeah, that was about it. We'd made it to Gore. So for me, it had the journey.
It's a lot better than popular culture makes it out.
Yeah, there wasn't as much incest as I was expecting. Still a bit, but it wasn't too bad. But so for me, if I'd started it at sort of 10 p.m. the night before-ish, and by about, you know, 4 p.m. the next day, I was there. So it ended up being, it was almost like flying to Europe in the end, but that's fine. All because
let's do a match down south. It's a lot easier than going to Australia, and it takes longer.
That's a good point. It was far simpler going to Australia. Not the paperwork, but the flying was.
No, flying. Yeah,
you just fly out of New Plymouth, you check your gun at New Plymouth, and then you don't see it till like Sydney or Melbourne. You don't have to get it off the plane to the other plane. It's just done for you. Yeah, and you're there in what, 7 hours from New Plymouth. Anyway, good point. But yeah, so it was an eventful day getting down there, and
day and bear in mind, I left on Wednesday, so I was twiddling my thumbs for days.
Yeah, I'm still not too sure how much money.
Cheap flight.
But how much did you save? $50 or something?
Yeah, exactly. It's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But I got to talk to the family for a few days, so there you go.
Yeah, true, and you got to hang out with Dave from Carlos.
Entertain retirees.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so we head down, get up bright and early. Again, me, Dave, and Mark, we've got sort of three joined
for the first morning
hotel rooms, and we drive out to the properties. About a 30-minute drive from where we're staying, if that, and up I don't know, in the back of Gore somewhere, and reasonably big hills, sort of rolling.
Whanganui Hills.
Yeah, something. They're just tussocky, sort of rocky things. Quite a nice area and
nice farm.
Yeah. It was well kept. It was big, yeah. And we get there. Sweet, go to sort of just like an area where we all sort of meet in the morning. And there's a zeroing board. And I say to Mark, hey, should we zero our guns? And Mark says something along the lines of, no, people should be ready to go. We'll be fine. We don't need to worry about it. So we're like, okay, whatever. And my zero was fine. As we come to realize at the end of Saturday, or probably the first stage for Mark, his was out by like 0.3 or something. But anyway.
No, I don't really work it out for a while, to be fair.
You just think you were like, it was real windy or something?
Oh, I just thought, obviously, my bullets have got little sails on them and are a lot more affected by the wind or something.
So we were in different
crazy theories.
We're in different squads. I was, so they do this a bit different. They split us up into 4 squads, 10.
Near 9 to 12 people, yeah.
Yeah, and then we moved. You went to like a station and you shot 3 stages at a station, then you moved to another station and shot 3 stages. This is on a Saturday. They sort of said we're going to be done by about 3. That was way off. We're done by 7 at night. People getting
it was supposed to rain.
People getting real tired and grouchy by that point.
Come on, guys. If you get stuck in and go fast, we'll be finished.
Yeah.
Three.
There's a real easy equation where you can do where you like add up the stage times.
Yeah, and we had Aaron, who's very good at maths.
Who did that, yeah.
So this ain't finishing until 6:30 at least.
Thanks,
Aaron.
Yeah.
Good mathematician.
Yeah. He's used to counting rice and stuff like that, you know, so he's pretty good at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so a little bit of stages. So we started on just like a prop sort of stage. It was like an assortment of things. Nothing too crazy. But what we did after that, we went to this area where it's a series of like rocks, like big rocks. That was cool. We shot several stages there, but one of them you moved. There's six different painted rocks. You shoot off at least five of them. But so how you moved through, and it was a sort of a three-dimensional stage. That was cool. So you're moving sort of forward and sideways and stuff, and then just a couple of targets. That was real fun. It was just sort of drizzling through a lot of the day. I was lucky enough to somehow convince Swarovski New Zealand to let me hold on to their 15x Swarovski binoculars. They are fucking mental good. So I was just sitting on those, essentially watching. They'd always, we need spotters. So I'd just, I'll spot. How I see it, if I'm spotting, I'm getting to watch everything and I'm not staring at a tablet. And so, like, I'm getting given a job by the RO, and they're happy to leave me on it. So I'm just watching the rain and doing that all day. And that was a big help for just paying attention to sort of subtle changes in wind and the like. I've never really spent that much time on optics before, so it was quite a, excuse the pun, but an eye-opener, you know. And
you wouldn't have any eye strain, though, Graham, with those quality optics.
No, you'd not with the Swarovskis, no way.
No.
I'll set them up, and as soon as I move away, people would jump in behind them, and I'd be like, hey, these aren't supplied event optics, mate. These are for me to use, you know, because there was supplied Swarovski stuff there. To be honest, the binoculars would have gone down there if I hadn't have acquired them, I imagine. But yeah, anyway, so that stage using that natural rock terrain was wicked cool. One thing I'd say for day one and day two, big targets, like a lot bigger targets than I expected. But yeah, so that was made a little bit easier when the wind got up for sure. And because you sort of had a little bit of, you know, if you underestimated or overestimated the wind, you could sort of still stay on plate. Any standout stages for you on day one, Mark?
No.
Nope. So how were you getting on day one?
Shit.
So should we elaborate?
No, might as well. Yeah. No, I just, yeah, I've got you for a 3, Mark. Or I've got you for a 4. If you're going to confirm this, 5. Well, hey, I've got you for a 3 again. Oh, yeah. I didn't zero any on day one, I don't think, but I might as well have. So, no, I just got on and then off, and, yeah, people be talking about wind, and I'll be like, really? 0.6. Yeah, God, I'm like 1.2 or 3, 1.3. Thinking to myself of these things. So I can't believe it. And then you swap directions and I'm like holding wind and it's just not working. So anyway, bottom line was the scope was, but the gun was basically an inch to the right. So all the stages with the wind coming left to right, I was, you know, so basically double the wind hold I probably should have been, roughly. And then all the stages when the wind was going the opposite way, I was basically having to hold nothing. So, but I wasn't doing that, was I? So I worked all that out later. So, you know, that's my excuse. But other than that, no, it was good fun. Enjoyed it, despite, you know, tanking severely. So
I managed to keep pretty, like, well.
It was good to watch the other good shooters in my squad.
With their zeroed guns.
Yeah.
So I managed to keep pretty consistent for most of the day, like sort of 8s and 9s out of 10 sort of thing. And then we get to our sort of nearing the end of the day, and there's a stage you like shot a Lunar Limits rack and then like another target to the left or something. Can I? Wind picked up significantly at this point, and I was thinking, yeah, man, my 6.5 is going to be awesome here because it just started dying down a bit again. I thought, I'm going to smash the stage, which everyone else has got like 3s on. And then I proceeded to hit the first target or whatever easy as, and then so you're prone, and I panned the rifle without opening the bolt, and I received my a well-deserved stage DQ, which it rattled me. Like, he said, DQ, and I'm like, what's happened? What have I done? And then he points at my bolt.
You're from the North Island, he said.
he pointed at my bolt and it was closed. And I was like, how is that closed? Because, like, it's just a habit to. And then I struggled to recover after the next few stages after that sort of mentally is the right word. I was just muttering to myself.
You're tripping. Yeah. Tripping over your lip.
Yeah, essentially. And, the next two stages were easy, easy. And I got, an 8. And then the next one, I got a 5 out of 10. Like, it was probably the two easiest stages of the match. And then, yeah, and then
I would have been happy with that. The 8 and 5.
Yeah, but up until that point, it'd have been pretty solid. And yep. So, it really messed my game up. And especially when you're doing well and you're doing pretty well. And then I managed to just get over myself a bit, did okay because it's quite a hard stage. And yeah, that was the end of my day one. It was, man, I'm not gonna say I was, because I am disappointed in myself about the whole thing, embarrassed too. But yeah, it was a bugger, man. I was.
That's right. You ended up 12th on day one, I think. Ninth. Sitting in 12th and
9th on day one.
What?
Yeah,
was it 9th?
I'm pretty sure.
Why did I say 12th?
You were in. I don't know.
No, I said 5th. Oh, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it now. I was 9th, and you were 28th. Yeah, so that.
Oh, you were too.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, it was Ian Hughes. It was 12th.
Yeah,
yeah, because you were talking about the battle for who's.
Yeah, we're going to battle for top for 10th or something. Was our plan after that?
Yeah.
So we went back, washed up, went out for dinner, a lovely fancy dinner, where Dave embarrassed us with the waitresses, and we won't get into that, and.
Not in a bad way, it's just comically.
Yeah, there was no glad wrap involved. And then, yeah, into day two.
So end of the day one, I think, people are shocked. I think Tom was in your squad, wasn't he? Yep.
Yep. Anyway, we got into day two and reset the bags. Because we shot in a different area. So, okay, here's the thing. We went to a different area of the farm on the Sunday. Right, so we met up in the same spot. We drove through some paddocks. It got a bit chaotic, and we parked up sort of on top of a ridge. You'd call it a ridge, and then there's two stations on either side of the top of the ridge, shooting down in both directions, which was pretty cool. Made use, it was pretty plain land we're in, so we had sort of props and stuff. But I probably liked day two more than day one. What do you reckon, course wise?
Yeah, I thought they could have run the whole thing there, actually. But anyway, was that the one where you had the 5 prone stages?
Oh, there was a few prone stages.
No, it was at day one.
And there was, to be honest, over the whole match, there was
5 prone positions. Like, you 1, 2, 3, 5 in a row.
That was day one, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it was day one. Yeah, see, I just little moles into one day.
I'd say I've never done this much prone.
We didn't do the boulders till the second day, so.
No, boulders was day one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I don't know what I was doing.
Yeah, so it's probably the most prone I've shot ever in a match, to be frank. Normally we sort of average, like, at matches you would do like one stage of prone, maybe a couple extra positions, but this had a lot. Not saying it was a bad thing, it's just saying a bit different. But yeah, day two, yeah, we had, it was only 6 stages on day two, I think so. And the weather was quite a bit worse. It was cold. It was, everyone's wearing jackets and puffies and everything on day two. And then a lot windier, and then also a bit of fog blowing through. And then, yeah, just sort of, just different props and shoot orders and that kind of thing. Any standout stage for you on the Sunday, Mark, now that you remember what stages we were shooting?
Oh, the long range stage. I know I did that on day one. That was a standout. What did we do on day two?
There was at long range stage on day two.
Was there?
Yeah, you should. Well, from the tank trap, there was like a long, couple of long targets.
No. It's the one where you had to go up the hill. That was day one.
That was day one, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I burned all my shots on the first target and didn't hit it because you had to hit it to move on.
Oh. So
that was great.
Did you zero it?
Yeah.
So you did zero something on day one?
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah. It's hard to tell these days. Then day two, I'm pretty sure I zeroed one or two.
Yeah.
just to keep up the form. But then I cleared a stage, which I thought, oh, that's great, because everyone's going to clear this. I think I was the first guy on the squad to shoot it, and I was shooting like a bag of shit. So, and I just, it was basically you had to run back and grab your mag. No, that was a different stage again. Don't worry. You had to touch the thing or something. Grab the thing. Yeah. So, and it was one target. So I just hammered away, hit it 8 times, cleared it. I was like, yay. So that was my highlight. And because I was first ever, I was like, wow, this is going to be easy. So, and I think, half the squad cleared it, probably just about. A few people had a bit of trouble, but the wind was sort of whistling through there a bit at times. It wasn't a long shot from memory.
It was like 400 metres or something, wasn't it? It wasn't big.
Yeah.
It was a 10-inch target.
I liked their, where you have different target shapes and you pull a card out thing. That's quite cool. So when you basically get the target shooting's nominated. So some people have a few issues with it, saying that means you could potentially, luck of the draw, get harder targets to shoot. And I was like, yeah, whatever.
So I'm a hypocrite on this because I agree some people get it easier than others.
Yeah.
But both of those stages on day one and day two, I got the really easy target order and cleaned them. So I was like, this is great. And then other people, like mine was like, I draw the same thing twice a bunch of times. So like,
no, I got that as well. Like immediately after I shot it, managed to hit something or something, the square, which is a closer one, or
They
were a square. I was like, sweet.
Yeah. So you don't have to dial it.
I generally felt I had a favorable draw. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, I think for most people, I think a lot had a double up at some point. They got the same. It was more than you thought. Got like the same thing drawn twice or whatever.
Yeah,
just 1-4 chance in it. So
yeah, I think I got it twice on both of them. It's
that was interesting. I don't mind that. It makes you.
I actually think it's against the. Up. I think it's against the PRS rules now. Maybe. I'm not sure. But it's old school. That's sort of like 2015 sort of thing.
Why would it be against the rule?
Because a shooter's disadvantaged against another one.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it's the same way as hostages and...
Yes. No, so in PRS rules, you cannot get negative points. So once you have a point, it's yours. Unless for a safety reason you get a disqualification like me. You cannot go backwards with points. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway.
I suppose people get antsy.
Well, people are used to like coming from Aussie.
What was your favourite day two stage, Graham? The tree?
I think I dropped a hit on that. It was pretty easy. Big target. It's like a 300 mil target. It was mean. Yeah, I didn't even have to aim at it. And then I liked the vertical and horizontal targets on that day.
When did you elevation?
Yeah. So we've just recently started doing something similar, and then see it again. I was like, oh, wicked. The horizontal one, it was like, you shot like a, it was like a massive ass gong at like, I don't know, 600-700 meters or something. And then there was a truing bar next to it, quite a thin truing bar, horizontal bar, similar to our one. And then, so you like hit that, and then you hit the thin truing bar once or twice, I can't remember. And then you go through a bunch of vertical.
Twice each.
I think then you come to the shorter. Because
I saw people.
Sorry?
I saw people miss the gong twice and then hit the bar twice. I was like,
How in the world do you miss that gong? That gong was so big.
It's, and then hit the thin horizontal thing.
Like okay. I don't know. That gong must have been like a 700-millimeter round gong. Well, it was huge.
compared to the. Yeah, it's comparative, I suppose, to the bar. The horizontal bar, it looked massive, but it probably made it look bigger. But
yeah. But the horizontal bar was maybe like 0.2 tall or something. It was pretty, not very tall. It was pretty wide, but that doesn't matter. And then, and then you shot, and then you come to the, then there's a bunch of vertical targets, and I quite like vertical.
Three
targets.
Closer ones.
Four.
Yeah.
Four. And then you went.
Three or four.
Two. I could only find three. That was cool. I liked that. I dropped 2 shots on that stage. I missed 2 shots on that stage, and that's right. And then, that's probably the coolest stage on day two. I'd say so. The rocks on day one, I really, really enjoyed the rocks, and then the vertical and horizontal on day two was cool because the targets were quite challenging. Also, they were actually the stage before that. Also, there's like a picnic table or something. Yeah, it was a picnic table, and you eat like. off one of the seats on the side of it and shot some targets. I think they may have been skinny. It was a big and a small, maybe. Anyway, it was a big and a small, big and a small. Yeah, that was all right. And then you moved and did some other things. The same thing. I like it. You sort of try, you know, read the plate off the first hit on the big one and then translate that to the little plate. So that was pretty good. I didn't mind that one. Yeah. I'm not just saying ones I did well on, but like just for cool, challenging stages. Yeah. Especially because it was windy for both of those for us. The wind got up quite a bit.
Yeah. Like you, I spotted a lot because I just needed, it helps me find targets when I get on to eventually shoot.
Does it ever? So that's so, that tussocky, sort of it'll be like super, super clean and then it'll go into tussock, this country down there.
So improved pasture and then tussock. And so that's a lot of what you're looking at all the time. So you got to basically, there's not a huge number of tree features. There is, but not as many, you know. So often you're explaining, you know, there's a brown patch in the improved pasture where it narrows up and you got to, and because the targets will be just in the tussock side of the improved pasture,
yeah.
So even more hard to see. So,
yeah.
But I do like that they paint the frames, so it's cool. And then they actually leave the targets grey, they're painted grey, which I saw in some ways over the day, some of the painted ones can look worse or hard, you know, it can be even hard to make out the shape of it if they're getting hammered. Whereas these grey ones just were the same look all day, so you're used to it. Gives you like, yeah, you're not looking, you're looking for anything different, if you know what I mean. You're looking for the frame color, but the target itself was consistent, so that was good.
Yeah, the gray targets, I didn't mind the gray targets.
Mm.
But you're just trying to find, well, again, like you said, spending time on binoculars, and then I was in the same thing, and just I learned pretty quickly that I needed to build like reference points to what the features were in the paddock, you know. So if the paddock had a funny swamp running through it, or a 2 points of the bush met somewhere, or something, I'd find a feature, or like you say, because there's very few trees, and always a large feature, so you could look, point the rifle, and then get behind the scope, and you'd generally be pretty well on it. But if you didn't plan where you were gonna, you sort of go, it was, I'd say it was actually a little bit harder than spotting on your place. Your place has got a few more shrubs and stuff around, but it's there's a few more recognisable features.
Rampant weeds, rustic weeds.
look over there and all those thistles. It's like, what thistles? But no, that's a good point. Spending time. So when you come to shooting, you're just shooting. You're not looking for your target because it's easy to soak up 15, 20 seconds or more.
I did get lost a few times, and that's even on target that I was shooting repeatedly, just I probably ended up running myself a bit low because of that. But so I meant my holdover was a bit wonky.
I normally
already wonky.
I'm not a fan of like zooming in and out of scopes. Like I try not to do it.
No, neither.
I did it more than I ever have down south. Like just because when I would get a wee bit lost if I was looking into a big patch of tussock or something. I'd never done it so much. Just quickly flicking down to 8. Oh, yep, there it is. And then zooming back up to 18 or 20 or whatever I'm shooting on. So that was, yeah. Better planning would probably reduce that a bit, and maybe getting used to shooting into that tussock a bit more. But it wasn't a hindrance in the end because the stage times
were
pretty generous. But it was all right.
I think I need to try a red dot on top, see where that goes. I have to test someone else's and see, but as a directional thing, but
you've got red dots.
I know I do. You're somewhere. Yeah, but I just want to test someone who's already got one mounted. So, have you looked at one? I don't know.
Yeah, yes.
Trouble is, I don't see people using them.
No, I think I until now, until this match, it hasn't been an issue for me. Target acquisition hasn't been so. So it's just bolting stuff on there. We've talked about it a bit lately, but like we're in this like mental phase of bolting stuff on your scope. Like it's getting out of hand. And
that's great.
Like, God, the amount of shit. Like, I mean, obviously the ring manufacturers are loving it because they're selling all these.
Timer, send it, the level.
You got to crush it, timer, you send it, level. You got to have a Kestrel. Although people abandon that pretty quick, apart from you. A data card.
But for me, I'm sticking with it.
One of those Vortex things, which I can't.
Backup bubble.
Yeah, an actual bubble level to go along with your digital level. One of those.
Just in case.
What are the Vortexes called? The rangefinder?
Oh, God. Yes, the impact. Was the fourth impact? Fourth
yeah, which to be honest, people are going to think, but I don't see the point of those over a good pair of range-finding binos. I might be a FUD
well,
here.
Who wants
but
a loaf of bread on top of the scope?
Yeah, but who wants to spot through their scope? But anyway, and then all the other shit you bolt on your gun. Yeah, it's getting crazy, but I can't remember how we got onto this. But anyhow.
Spot at finding targets.
Yeah. Finding targets, yeah. Red dot. I can see the advantage to the, we're seeing it, especially with the guys getting into the late 50s, is the magnifying ring that goes in front of your turret so you can read the actual the lines. Because a lot of you guys need reading glasses now, right? But you don't want to shoot in reading glasses.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So they put a little magnifying lens. That's not a silly idea if your eyes are gone. So.
No, it's true.
Yeah.
Saves having to
guess.
Flip your glasses up.
Yeah, yeah. Or count the clicks.
Or like me in the Carl's bunker, couldn't see the HUD at all because it was too dark.
Oh, because I think it was in the last podcast we talked about how all gun shit is analog. But yeah, anyway. But other than that, day two.
Moving on.
Day two, it went pretty cool. We didn't get done too early, was it, by about three? Six stages. So this day we stayed with the same RO and rotated around stages. And yeah, I was in a squad with all, it's nearly all North Islanders, which is cool. You go down there to meet all these Southerners and you just end up shooting with the dudes we shoot with all the time. But it was a pretty experienced squad too. We had, well, not much in the way of new shooters, which is, I'm not saying it's a good thing. It's just, it was smooth because everyone was sort of well tuned up. And yeah, it was a thing. It was, Wes won a Garmin. That was pretty cool. And a shoot-off. Hard to explain how that got set up.
Oh, the middle-of-the-pack shoot-off.
Yeah, something. Wes won that. So first thing on this Sunday morning, they sort of shot off from one of the earlier stages, which is pretty awesome for Wesy. And yeah, and then we wrapped up Friday. I managed to have a good day, managed to claw back some points from my sort of disappointing mistake I made on Saturday. Yeah, and then I think, what was it? Anthony won, Tom in second, and the Australian.
Andy Little from Australia, his first trip over. Yeah. So well done to him.
So yeah, thanks to Carlos and for coming on board with some awesome sponsorship. They don't just support our events, they support others. Funnily enough, we've got a 22 match coming up in 3 weeks that they're supporting also. But yeah, worth the trip down there, I think, hey Mark? It was a good weekend.
Yeah.
And
learned a lot.
What did you learn?
I learned a lot. Just, pays to put a few rounds through and check your zero, probably, would be good.
It's not as if you can check your gun very often, though, eh? It's not like you can get to the range.
No, I don't have access to any.
Yeah.
I'm not, like, taking it with me every day.
Shooting goats and stuff every day.
Shooting goats with it. No. I decided the muzzle brake experiment's over for a while because it was getting pretty annoying. So I've gone back to the suppressor and rejigged it and tested it a bit, and it's actually it's a heavy suppressor, so it's not too bad.
It's
weight to that gun.
B&T Starlight, is it?
Yeah,
then they are quite a good suppressor also. Not just, I don't care about noise with suppressors that much, but like the recoil reduction is,
the recoil reduction's good. So I've been testing that again. I think the trade-off's fine. I mean, the brake was great in terms of what it was supposed to do, but just that short barrel being close to you, got showered and dust a few times up here, and then down there, it's hammering away at you all the time. So that's, I'll run it on a longer gun, longer when the barrel's further away.
Yeah.
But once again, I didn't make many mistakes with Senator in terms of stage planning or anything, so that was good. So I'm actually, understanding the cause of fire and not making errors. Too many anyway, hardly. I had one or two on the tree, for example, did the wrong color or something. So that was fine. Just, I got bamboozled by my gun not shooting because it shot real well the weekend before. I guess the lesson there is if you're putting 220 rounds through it, it pays to check it again. So it's a lot more, I was probably used to not having to re-zero guns. Because people bring me guns all the time, say, I've knocked it, I reckon it's out, and it's still the same. And they bring it back in. Oh, I've dropped it, I reckon it's out, and check, it's still the same. So a lot of guns are checked for people. They'll say, it's fine. Or even my own ones, they're like, it's still doing the same thing. So, but they're not getting the rounds through them either, so I don't know whether that
Yeah.
Makes a difference. They're not
practiced. Yeah. No. Yeah. I guess my takeaways would have been obviously sharpen up on the safety side of things. That aside, shooting, I was pretty happy with how I shot on all bar the end of Saturday, so that wasn't really a big deal. One thing I was happy with is after the sort of the disappointing end to Saturday for me.
Stop saying that.
No, it was. And then but coming back to Sunday and actually like enjoying myself. Like I was in a cool squad, cool dudes, you know, having a laugh and maybe that pressure coming off a bit, I don't know. But managed to sort of
low expectation lead to pleasant surprises. So.
Well, I still had a goal. I didn't want to go there and zero stuff, but I had a goal of getting into fifth, which I don't think I achieved. I think I got sixth or something.
I wanted to be bottom 10 and I made it.
Top 10? What'd you say?
I wanted to be bottom 10 and I made
it. Oh, you made it to the bottom 10. Oh.
31.
Yeah.
Got literally worse than the.
Did you go backwards over the.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. Yeah. But anyway.
Don't worry. Day two, I'll be sorted out. Nah.
So what did you end up in the end?
31st.
So you didn't just think to click your zero over a bit?
No.
Okay. Hindsight, right? I think I managed to, I end up sixth, so nothing spectacular, but not bad considering. But it's definitely worth
To be fair, I thought I was just shooting crap.
Yeah.
For most of the first day, so I didn't really think it was the gun.
After your glorious victory the weekend before, eh? You fucking used up all your...
Used up my peak. Now I'm in a slump for 4 years.
Yeah.
But that's right.
And then,
it was good fun. Well run. Good people down there to meet and see how they do things. And so, it was good.
Yeah. And then...
Look forward to going back eventually.
And then it was time to come home.
Yep.
So Mark and I decided... So Mark came down and... Was it a Wild Track? V6 Wild Track. It was a nice modern one.
Yeah, it was the only one they had, and I was like, sweet, because it was the V6 version.
Yeah, so. It was fast. God damn, it was awesome. But anyway, so
yeah,
I said, oh,
that's still over my old piece of crap.
Mark said, oh, we should head back the scenic highway, and I thought, shit, I was actually thinking the same thing. So we left at 5:30 or something, conscious of getting there in time, and went up, I don't know what you call it.
Cromwell Tekapo Way, yeah.
God, I've driven through there several times in the past, but I've always been driving. So to be
it's a lot better drive.
To be a passenger, it was a treat. Yeah, and plus Mark will never let you drive anyway. But it was fantastic. It was a very enjoyable part of our country. And then we're gonna go back to Christchurch, right? We get the car washed, da da da, return the car, sweet. And then rewind back to Thursday, so when my flights got cancelled and I rebooked my flight down there. Got that all sorted, walked out into the lounge, and my lovely wife said, how are you getting home? And I said, oh, no, my flights home aren't affected, so I'll just fly from Christchurch to New Plymouth. And she said, yeah, but what about our car? And I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, our car will be in Wellington. Living it. So I had to get back on the phone. This is that night. Hoping, like, I'd, by some miracle, get connected to the same fellow who I talked to earlier. Didn't. Got someone else that explained to them what was going on. And so anyway, so my flight on the Monday was from Christchurch to Wellington. It was like a 6:30 PM flight. And so Mark and I arrive at the airport like what, 12:30-ish? And I tag on into the Koru Lounge with Mark. Sweet, you know, Mark's like, just stay in here until nighttime. But so I just
What an asshole. That's the first time I've ever had this happen.
So when you go in as a guest, they get you to scan your ticket. Now I know why. And then so go in.
Because I've never seen that before. So, yeah. And
So Mark, you're leaving at like 2 or something, okay, or 3 o'clock. Like,
yeah, I had been out ago or something.
Anyway, so we sit down and the young guy then this thing comes over a little bit. I wouldn't say he's up himself, but he's had a hint of authority to him. and he goes, oh, your friend, your guest, he's leaving on a far later flight. So he can't be in here once you leave. And so Mark sort of tries to explain to him like how they'd changed the flights on me, which caused me.
Yeah, we were booked on the same flights originally. Yeah. Flight on the way back. Yeah.
And then due to their stuff, we had to change it. And he's like, oh, I can understand that, but still, you're going to have to leave. And so we're in there for like an hour. And so I like eat as much food as I can. And And then I get kicked out. And so I just go sit outside my gate for like 3.5-4 hours. And then...
A lot of time to think, Agro. Maybe that's why you shot so well, because you said it to Dunedin thinking about shooting.
I was all zenned out. And then, then flying to Wellington. And I was like, I get to Wellington, get the car, and there's like a traffic jam getting out of Wellington to get to Messines Tunnel, they call it now, in front of the War Memorial. And so it takes me like, I don't know, I'm out of Wellington like by like, it's like nearly 9 o'clock or something. And then, drive all the way home to New Plymouth. Have a sleep on the side of the road so I don't die in a car crash. And I think I got home at, what was it in the end, 2:30 or something in the morning, on the Tuesday morning. And so I just I text work, I'm not coming in for obvious reasons. And then my lovely daughter woke me up at about 7 a.m. And that was it. That was the big trip to Gore. I'm assuming your flight home, you flew straight to New Plymouth and drove home, Mark.
Yeah, it was a breeze. I'm just thinking, there's the movie called The Terminal where Tom Hanks gets stuck in the International Airport Terminal for days on end. It's pretty much your weekend.
My weekend.
At each end of it anyway.
Yeah. Oh, man. It was some. So the day two travel was a similar 5:30 a.m. till 2:30 a.m. the next day. So it was.
Yeah, because I was so paranoid by then. So I thought, just get going early. So if we get delayed getting up there, we'll get there. But no, the drive was real good. So great. Best way to go.
Well, that was the highlight of the weekend. And that was.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. And the weather was pretty good too. Like it wasn't, that was nice. Bit of a treat actually. Makes me want to move down there. But anyway.
I can't believe I lived there. I lived down south for 12 years and didn't see much of it.
You're in Christchurch, weren't you?
Mm.
That's probably the least interesting parts of the South Island.
Hey, don't hassle the village of the damned.
Yeah. Yeah. They've had enough already. They don't need me on the coast. No, but other than that, it was good fun. Plenty of North Island shooters went down there. I think it was 8 out of 10. The top 10 was North Island guys.
No.
There's Australians too. Damn it.
West Islanders were 2 of them, and North Islanders 6. So yeah. And South Islanders made up the other 2 spots.
Yeah. But that was cool. But we're all New Zealanders, apart from those Australians.
Yes. Apart from the Australian.
But coincidentally, the Australians, New Zealand PRS members, so their scores didn't get counted, so I got moved up 2 spots. So I'm currently sitting 4th in the PRS standings.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. I've moved up to 29th. Sweet.
Maybe more. Are you going to tell people how you illegally entered production class?
Oh, I did more than that.
So what divisions did you enter?
All of them, I think. I ticked every box. So I was like, oh no, what's the other one?
Senior. Military.
Is there a mil LE?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tactical.
I ticked that.
Tactical.
I ticked senior, and Collie was believing me for a while there. And then I said, oh, I'm actually 50. He said, oh, what?
Is it 60 for senior?
So he kicked me out of senior. No, it's 55.
Oh.
So I got booted out of that production. How much is that rifle worth?
12.
Nah, kick me out of that too.
You'd be more than double the production, wouldn't you?
I looked at the US dollar figures and it wasn't flash. Yeah, it was double basically.
That'd be about $5,000, wouldn't they, the guns?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
So
what's production? $3,000 and 2,000 scope?
It was 2.5, maybe 3 now, but as far as I remember, because all those Delta Pros and that were, 2,499.
Yeah, there's the new MPA production class rifles that are pretty sure they're $3,000, and they are crazy good race guns. They've really stretched the rules as far as they can go to get some of these guns in. But if you want a race gun for $3,000, some of these offerings are just absolutely mental now. Anyway, it's a story for another day. So you got kicked out of all the divisions apart from open.
Yeah.
Oh, there's some injustice here. We'll lay a complaint. Yeah.
If you can't fit in the division, just get the rules changed over time until you can fit in it.
That's what you do. You join your local council and lobbying doesn't really work that well here, does it?
No. Straight out bribery work. So.
Yeah. No, cool. But again, good fun weekend away. We hadn't been down south for a couple of years. So.
Maybe. Thanks to Sam and his team down there for running it.
That was good. And then
righto.
That was fun. Yeah, I think that about wraps up.
See you on the next one. That wraps it up.
All right, everybody. See you later.